Welcome back to the Shout Louder podcast. My name's Sarah Williams. I'm your host. I look after Shout Louder, which is a website focusing mainly on DIY punk rock. We call ourselves a music zine for punks who don't like paper cuts. This podcast is a small part of that site, which you can find at shout-louder.com. I also work with Lockjaw Records, which is something we talk about a lot in today's interview. Ed Hall is an amazingly dedicated, focused, detailed audio engineer who's been working with Lockjaw for absolutely years. His band Egos at the Door were one of the first bands that signed with us back in the day. I was really excited to speak to him, though, about his new business projects. He's been running All Silk Mastering House, doing mixing and mastering for the last year or so, and he's recently opened up All Silk Recording Studio. So to go visit him, I had to drive up into the wilds of Lancashire. I mean, it's not that far. It's, you know, less than an hour north of Manchester, but there were sheep everywhere, and I was very excited. I got to visit him up in Manchester and go to see the mastering studio where he's been recording his live sessions. So I've seen it on YouTube plenty of times, but I've never actually been there. It was a fantastic environment, a really lovely space, and Ed was a great guest to talk to. We had heaps to go through. We talked about some of his history that's led to him, building up his business as it is now. We talked about some of his previous bands, including A War Against Sound, Egos at the Door, and currently Edgarville. And we also talked, he gave me some, you know, advice for bands who were starting to record for the first time. He talked about what it's like engineering in general, what he likes and dislikes about it. And we talked about some of his, like, you know, passion projects and what he'd like to be doing in the future as well. It was just a really nice conversation and I enjoyed sitting down with him. As a result, it's a little bit longer than normal because we were just having so much fun. But yeah, stick it through to the end. Ed has some absolutely fascinating advice that he particularly talks about in the latter half of the podcast. But yeah, let's jump straight in. This is Ed Hall. Okay, Ed, welcome to the Shout Louder podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so you are Ed Hall of All Silk Mastering House and now All Silk Recording Studio, is that right?
That's me.
Previously of Egos at the Door, various other bands as well, right? What else has been in your past in a very quick nugget of information?
None that's worth mentioning.
Fair play.
Nothing worth anyone's time.
I'm really excited to be here. So I've just driven up and we're in your mastering studio.
You are. Welcome.
It's absolutely.
Can't believe
beautiful.
This is the first time you've come around.
I've been talking about coming up since you... when did you first get this off the ground?
I think it was August 2018.
Yeah.
So since then. Since before then, really.
I remember thinking I'd come up and have a look and maybe we'd try and get you a little bit of love through the Shout Louder crew, you know? Because I think the space you've got here, I mean, I know you've worked with loads of DIY bands in the past, but the space you've got here is absolutely perfect for the needs of a lot of the kind of people who listen to this podcast, I guess.
Yeah. 100%. I'd like to think so, definitely.
Yeah, but it's also, you've got the best taste in decor. Like, this is such a nice space to be in.
It's not often I get let off, let loose to do this kind of thing, so it's all about white.
It's very, very, I mean, it's quite stripped back in here. I really like the kind of wood feel you've got to. It's very natural, like neutral tones.
I like wood.
And I'm really, like, in love with your lamp as well, which people obviously who are listening can't see. But we've got some kind of, like, afternoon mood lighting here at the moment.
Yeah, setting the mood. B&Q's finest, that.
Very good. But you've done some live sessions in here as well, right?
Yeah, I've been running the live sessions here for a good few months. It was something I really wanted to do, but I just didn't have, like, a place to do it or, like, the video kit to do it. So just invited a mate around with a GoPro once and just started hacking at it from there, and it's getting better.
That's exactly how it should get started, though, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
I always think, actually, it'd be interesting to know how you feel on this, but I always think that when you want to start off a new project, there's nothing wrong with trying to do it on, like, a minimum budget to see if it works.
Then
if it works, you can invest your time and energy into
definitely.
It.
Definitely. Obviously, you've got to get that, like, you've got to get the growing pains out of the way. Like, the only way to sort of do something is to just start doing it badly.
Yeah.
And then eventually you find a way.
it's such a weird thing. I kind of think sometimes you expect to, I mean, I think this is slightly dependent on your personality, but for me, I'm a bit of a perfectionist and sometimes I expect to be good at something straight away.
Oh God, I know.
And then
it's the worst. It's such a come down to earth when reality bites and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know that you've had quite a few bites of reality over the years, particularly with your last studio, which got...
Yeah, ransacked.
Yeah, burgled. Yeah. So tell me a bit of the history of that. So how did you first get into audio engineering and that kind of thing?
First, I was like... They used to have like a music room at the high school I went to. So there was always like a few people in there.
Yeah.
When I started going in there, it was always like I was in like year 8 or something. So the year 11s had like sort of reign of the place.
Yeah.
So just go in and like watch them have band practices until we were old enough to have our own band practices.
That's cool. Yeah.
So that was how like I spent most of my lunch times and everything, which was pretty sick actually, to be fair. I don't think like a lot of schools sort of like, especially back then, sort of like provided the outlet for people like that.
Weirdly, just having a space in which to do it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Like, yeah.
We only got to use, we had like this massive music room. It was like a fairly new middle school. I remember in year 8, we had the run of it on a Thursday afternoon or Thursday lunchtime. And that was like the best part of the week. We'd go in and we'd listen to new music and just have a noodle about and like mess about with, you know, like schools have all those different little percussion instruments and stuff like that that you will never see afterwards.
They're all amazing as well. I love it.
Like some kind of shaker or like the metal thing that you'd like, what are they called?
The beaded one.
Oh yeah, you used to have them. And then there's some that are like ridged that have like
And it was always like painted like a fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clackers, I don't know.
Stuff like that. But, you know, you just mess about with things like that you haven't ever seen since. That was such a good, I don't know, it was a good way of making music seem more fun rather than just having it as a class that you'd go to as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because you just, you know, it's your break time. You're left to your own devices. A couple of people have instruments and, like, you take it in turns or whatever. And it all just, like, went from there, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then by the time I got to year 11... it was like, gosh, like I'm in year 11 now, like we can have band practices. So just cracked on with that. And I had like one of those 10 quid MP3 players that you could record onto as well.
Yeah.
So it was like sort of my highlight of the day was going in there on lunchtime, just leaving that on record for 40 minutes or something.
Oh, amazing.
And then listening to it on the school bus home.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just used to do that. And I suppose that's the start because it's technically it's recording.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it is. Just, I mean, that's how you sort of start demoing things as a band, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
So what was the next step from there when you started to leave school and things started to move on?
I suppose I was lucky enough to be of a generation that had, like, access to music type things set up in colleges already.
Yeah.
So there was always, like, open days and whatnot going on. And I really didn't have, like, options available to me, to be honest. Like, did all right enough in my GCSEs to like get onto a college course, but sixth form definitely wasn't on the cards. It was like just too wild in the brain to...
too much going on.
Yeah. I wasn't academic like that. So just sort of explored what options were open. And I loved skateboarding at the time. Like I absolutely loved it. It was what I did after school every day. Just like got a skateboard, 2 quid on a bus, went somewhere, skateboarded until I had to go home.
That's awesome.
I really wanted to pursue that, but there's no avenue like available to someone that lives in Blackburn and has just left school to
to
be
go
a
and
professional
like
skateboarder.
Be a pro skater. Yeah,
but I was equally into music as well, and like that was sort of the other pastime. So there was like an access to music course available for that. So I went to the open day.
Yeah,
I was just like, yeah, this feels like home. Like this is where I probably should be.
Yeah,
went from there. I really loved it, actually.
So doing the access to music course, were you starting to learn the basics of kind of the technical side of things?
Yeah, the bare basics. It was one of those courses that's just like everything. There's like 8 modules. It's like business, theory, tech, just like anything and everything, management. So it was like a broad, basic introduction of everything.
The weird thing about that, I mean, I remember being... like the same, I did an AS, like I did A-level music technology and stuff like that. I wasn't good enough to do the music A-level because I'm not good enough on the theory or composition or anything like that.
Oh yes,
it's a different discipline, but I really enjoyed all the technical, like fiddling around with cables and knobs part of it. So so I used to like doing that. But I remember a lot of my friends went down the access to music course route. So we're obviously, you know, I think there's an age band in which that was really popular.
Yeah.
But it's weird actually looking at it a few years down the line, because
I'd say now that to be successful in the industry, you have to be able to do a lot of different disciplines. You can't just specialise in one area with music. You have to be...
Yeah.
I mean, some of the more successful artists I've known are the ones who are writing scores for things rather than just performing, or they're hosting radio shows, or they're doing press as well, or they're doing management, or, you know, it's everyone's kind of got to be a bit of a jack of all trades musically.
Yeah, yeah. You end up wearing so many more hats than you anticipate. Like with this place, all I want to do is wake up, have a coffee and just work on some records. But it's like, nope, you got to put on the marketing hat, you got to put on the branding hat, social media, admin. And like, before you know it, it's like, oh, wait, hang on a minute, about 30% of the job's doing audio.
It's ridiculous, isn't
it? Yeah, so you definitely always got to wear lots of hats, ones that you don't anticipate as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is learning to almost upskill yourself. It's so much, it must be a lot easier now that we've got things like YouTube to just learn how to do all that basic stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the greatest teaching tools I think we have now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, for Shell Louder, I've had to learn how to use a website. That's...
Which one are you on? Is it Squarespace?
I do WordPress, but it's like even really basic things like how to do that. I've had to learn how to use Photoshop, and all I wanted to do was write about some bands.
Yeah.
I was like, I wasn't intending to have to do all the rest of it. And now I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I know.
But it's quite fun because you're personally growing and learning all the time.
Yeah, big time, big time. Yeah. It's a frustration as well because, like you say, you have the outcome in mind.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you start going, it's like, oh, like the outcome's miles away. Like I've got to learn this or I've got to learn that. And we use a web designer here and like he's absolutely brilliant. But then like there's the frustration of like, I've got to send work off to him and it's like, oh, got to sort of sit and wait. And then I had to go at using something like Squarespace and it's like, oh, this looks crap. Yeah, I'm letting him do it.
Yeah.
Like, I do not want to have to learn this as well.
I think so much podcast advertising now has convinced me that Squarespace is the best thing to do.
I've used it once and it made me go grey, so I was just like,
there goes our sponsorship deal.
It's brilliant. Disclaimer, I'm an idiot. It's okay. I'm sure a normal person can navigate it fine.
Then again, isn't there one of their USPs is that like anyone can do it? You don't need to have any skills. Uh-oh. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'll edit this bit out.
You're really good at all the mastering stuff.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, thanks.
What was I going to say? So you did your Access to Music course.
Yeah.
Presumably around then was when the band was starting to really get going as well.
Yeah, we had one in college because it's like it's part of your assignment to just grab whoever's nearest to you and make a band.
How successful was that?
For 17-year-olds, not bad actually. Mm-hmm. have you ever met Willis?
Maybe.
He's like he's sort of like an unknown but known celebrity of like punk. The band we had was War Against Sound.
Yeah.
In college, but we were only like 16, 17 years old when that happened.
Yeah.
But TNS got behind us, so we did like quite a few of our own little tours. Don't know how we managed it. It was like the MySpace days. Had absolutely no idea what we were doing. Played to like 10 people a night. But it was our original band.
Oh, really?
War Against Sound, which then...
Oh, I remember that. I remember knowing about that, but I don't remember it.
We were so stupid. Like, it was funny. But yeah, like part of our assignments were just being in a band and like proving that you've recorded some music.
Yeah.
And it's like you got sort of signed off on your module for just like turning up to band practice. So I was like,
amazing.
Go on then. So we just cracked on with that.
Yeah.
Did a few tours and then the end of college came and like that was like the sort of Reality Bites kind of time. Like I think it was just by the time we finished college, like we all needed to get a job. I chose like the uni route.
Yeah.
And went to like sound school and started, you know, taking all this side of things a little bit more seriously. But then he had to like go down a route of immediacy because he was expecting his first child.
Wow. Yeah.
At like 18, 19 years old.
So you really need to, that's when reality really kicks in then.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally straight out of college. It's like, all right, okay. Adulting starts now. But yeah, like he's always been like sort of my best mate and
brilliant.
Loved him. But that was where the band started, like all the TNS sort of
connections. I think that he has been mentioned on the podcast before.
I'm sure he has.
There's a little Easter egg here. I think I asked John from Fair Dues whether he wanted to give anyone a shout out. This was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I think he popped up on that episode. Yeah.
Brilliant. It's a personal mission. I think we should just make him as famous as possible in the punk scene.
Excellent.
Without him knowing.
Well, if he listens, there you go.
But yeah, we were like best mates about it. We were really like as serious as 17-year-olds could be. So we just got in studios all the time, toured all the time we could. And
yeah.
It was like college would let us do it and they'd sign off our modules for Amazing. Doing it. So that's where I sort of realised like, yeah, go on then, I'll have a crack at this for a bit longer. Because, you know, we were lucky enough to be of a generation that had access to music. Like, is it still going?
I don't know. But yeah, I remember we definitely had it at my time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be really interested to find out, actually.
Yeah, me too. Because I know the one that we were on in Blackburn, I'm pretty sure it's defunct now.
Yeah, how strange. Well, the only thing I've seen around it recently is before I moved up to Manchester, I was living in Ipswich and I worked at a music venue called The Smokehouse, which was, it was actually a studio. They had, I think, 3 rehearsal rooms. They had a radio station run out of there and stuff like that. But they'd gotten some Arts Council funding. Oh, actually, no, they got it from someone else, but they got a load of funding to open a music venue
right
there. And it was entirely staffed by volunteers. And obviously, a lot of our volunteers were kind of young adults who were doing different music courses, trying to expand their skills. You know, we'd give people the opportunity to like learn how to sound engineer, like live sound, do the lighting and stuff like that, or work behind the bar, which is what I was doing. But
every little helps.
Someone's got to serve the beer.
So wait, you had to volunteer on the bar?
Well, you could volunteer in the venue,
right?
And obviously, one of the jobs is running the bar.
Wow.
So it was fun. It was good. But, you know, it was things like helping out with promotion, social media, photography, stuff like that. Yeah. But I think a lot of them were doing music courses or had done music courses, but it was a different setup, maybe like a BTEC sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it was BTEC when I did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure how sort of popular those kind of courses are now.
Certainly in Norwich, it was really, really pushed at everybody. Like there was a lot of, I mean, the thing is, the Norwich had a lot in terms of, well, sorry, where I kind of grew up, that had a lot of venues that were part of the Access to Music scheme as well.
Right.
And they had an arts college there, which I think pushed it too.
Yeah. Well, Norwich was always the go-to. Like as soon as I could, you know, like start touring and getting out of Blackburn and stuff, like Norwich was the go-to place. It was like the most cultured place in England. There was always
That's amazing, isn't it?
Like house party shows.
We're saying they used to do house party tours, or like not a tour, but like a day where you'd get a group of bands and you'd go from house to house to house to house.
Yeah, yeah, I'm still trying to remember the name of it.
They did one. I'm sure they did one recently.
Was it just
Dan
house
Allen.
Tour?
Maybe.
I think it might have been the house tour.
I've certainly got friends who'll remember, but yeah. I feel so lucky to have grown up with that environment as well.
Yeah.
It was quite, yeah, it was really, I don't know, arts seemed like more of a career, I think, around there. Than
well, everyone was just involved, so it was like there's just always some sort of like culture happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Norwich was ace for that.
Whereas now, I think for me, I mean, one of the reasons I live in Manchester is because I think it's really good for that. I think there's a lot of opportunities for different people to get involved, you know. But yeah, back when I was doing all that stuff in Norwich, that was before I'd really discovered what I'd call like DIY punk rock. Like,
yeah.
But it was the same ethos.
Yeah.
Like everybody get involved, everybody pitch in, not for profit, all about creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice little foundation for life, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Norwich is such a good place to be. any excuse to be there.
Yeah.
I was recorded Ducking Punch's first album when he was still acoustic.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I think I was in my first year of uni and it was like, oh, there's an excuse to go to Norwich. Like, I'm going down.
Brilliant.
Took this little M-Box thing with, like, 2 inputs, couple of mics, and just, like, stayed in his missus' flat and just, there was a spare room and we just spent, like, a weekend in there. Like, that's Norwich down to a T.
That's brilliant. I mean, Dan Allen's one of those people now who's really made a career out of creativity as well. You know?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
He's always on tour. The albums get better and better every single one they release, in my opinion, anyway. And he's an amazing artist. He's doing so much with that.
Always get him to do stuff. Do you remember he was in a ska band before Ducking Punches?
I do not remember. Tell me.
Oh, really? I'm struggling to remember the name. Everyone was in a bloody ska band. But we, War Against Sound played with them in St. Helens. I really can't for the life of me remember the name of it, but we played with them in St. Helens And that was like the first time we sort of met him, and it was like a really great night. Some sort of like Sublime style band
amazing
were headlining. It was definitely that era.
I think I'm going to have to make this like a segment on the podcast. What was the ska band you were in before you became a real band? It comes up so often.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, so War Against Sound, didn't you do a TNF split with Stand Up Riot?
And
not Rising Strike, Beat the Red Light? No.
Stoke-on-Trent.
Oh.
Joe Riley.
Oh, Sense of Urgency.
That's the one.
There we go. That's where my brain went Rising Strike, because Tommy... There was some logic in my brain there, but...
Rising Strike are brilliant.
Oh, well, have you heard Follow Your Dreams yet?
Sorry?
Have you heard Follow Your Dreams yet?
Not properly, no.
Fuck me, you're going to love them.
Yeah.
It's like Rising Strike, Do Egos at the Door. It's amazing.
Sick.
Like, well, I mean, I'm assuming you don't hate everything you've ever recorded.
I mean, yeah, but we'll, that's but by the by.
Yeah, Rising Strike have now developed into... So it's three members of Rising Strike have gone on to do Follow Your Dreams with Kaz, who hasn't been in a band before, but obviously she's part of the TNS Records, Revenge of the Psychotronic Man crew.
Yeah.
And every single time I see them play, they get better and better and better. They've been going a year as of last week. Like, they did their first live show a year last week. And yeah, it's really like discordant, crazy, like totally cavalier approach to time signatures.
It's Tom and Stuart, isn't it? Stuart's on drums.
And it's just so nice to see them doing well. But also with them, it's really interesting to see bands that you've... or musicians, at least, that you've known for years and seen in different projects, but they get better as musicians as they go on.
I feel
that with some like bigger commercial bands, there's a thing where you'll have the first album, and then from that, everything will be a bit of a downward spiral.
Yeah.
Whereas with DIY bands, it's a hobby, so people are gradually ploughing away at it and literally getting better and better and better.
It makes perfect sense. I heard a theory about that. So in the instance where you mentioned like... commercial band like brings out an amazing first album, and then like it's always that cliche of like the difficult second album, but like most of the time that first album comes out of a period of time where they were doing it like as a hobby or whatever. Yeah. So while they're developing, bear in mind their first album is probably like a 5-year effort.
Exactly.
And then someone gets behind them, it's like, oh, this is awesome, and then you know, they get like funded and whatnot, and then they have to like contractually do a second album, and it's only like 6 months to a year's worth of maturation.
Yeah.
So then it's like, well, that first album came out of the better period of life, and then the second album, because it's contracted, loses its essence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's definitely something to be said about that.
But I feel like there's almost an assumption that, well, it's like sequels are always worse than the original, right? That's a general phenomenon.
But I tend
to think that, I don't know, for example, a band that breaks up in the scene now, you'd sort of think that their next band might not be quite as good as that one that you loved years ago. They're getting better musicians, they're getting better at songwriting, so actually the subsequent bands should be better.
Yeah.
And now that I've kind of started to realise that, I'm really, I don't know, it's opened up a new world of, well... not enjoyment, but open-mindedness to me.
Well, it's...
on that kind of Scarcore level, I'm interested to see what Redeeming do. That's the kind of reincarnated Beat the already. Red Light. Yeah.
Like 30-second Instagram videos, and you can already tell, like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I've not had a chance to see them live yet. Did you record some stuff with them?
I did Pook's Me, Now, EP.
Yeah.
That was when I was still freelancing. But we had a right laugh with that. I tucked him in. He stayed at my parents' old house, and he was like, I think it's this very sofa, actually.
Yeah.
And we'd like done a hard day's recording, proper laugh, and then he was like sort of all there. So I brought him like 10 blankets in, and I just started like tucking him in. That's my favourite Pook story.
Oh, that's really sweet. He absolutely loved it. Oh.
So yeah, I did his solo thing, but no, I haven't done any of the Beat the Red Light, like the heavier stuff, but I would be all over it.
Well, there you go. Amazing. There's a shout out to Redeeming if any of them are listening and want to do some stuff.
Ah, God. Yeah, they'd love it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what they come up with, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be silly. Like, Tim's back on drums now, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be silly.
But I'm trying to think who's originally, like, kind of... So the thing is, they're really keen for people to know that they're not Beat the Red Light. And they've made a... I've spoken to a couple of them, and they've said they really want to earn their stripes as a new band rather than just... kind of getting thrown in as Beat the Red Light new version.
Yeah.
Like they don't want to, they've been headlining a few bills and they don't want to.
They
want to
go back, yeah.
Yeah, they want to go back to the beginning. But I think it's G on bass, obviously Pook. I think Rob's still involved. And yeah, Tim, I can't remember. I've not seen them live yet. So
no, I haven't seen them live, but I've seen Beat the Red Light live when Tim was on drums. And
he's incredible.
It's just, yeah, silly business.
Bastards, absolute bastards. but yeah, so, okay, War Against Sound, old TNS days, years and years ago.
Yeah.
What came after that?
SSR, pretty much. Did my first year there. And then
so that's
Eagles
the School
started.
Of Sound Recording
yeah,
in Manchester, yeah?
Yeah, it's called Spirit Studios now, actually.
Oh, is that those guys?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, they were SSR, yeah.
I was recently chatting to them in a pub.
Oh, brilliant.
At random, yeah.
Which guys? Because I know they've got loads of staff there.
I spoke to a few people from there, but we were talking about maybe that they were interested in having some of our kind of smaller bands come in and work with them.
Oh, really?
Which is cool.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah.
Because that's what students need as well. Right. If you're gonna train up like a student audio engineer, then having bands that have got like the awareness that a lot of DIY bands is like perfect for them, because then it's a whole level of stress off their shoulders as an engineer to actually like learn the craft.
Yeah.
Whereas like half the time when you're in university and you're trying to find bands, it's like it's your mate's band and one of them's 2 hours late because he was at rugby practice or something.
Yeah.
It's like it's really difficult to learn. So yeah, if there's any like hope of that happening, then that'd be really good for probably everyone involved.
That's fantastic, actually. Yeah, they emailed me last week, so
yeah,
I'll have a look at that.
Get on that. Get on
lovely.
That.
Okay, so yeah, you're SSR, which is now Spirit Studios.
Yeah, yeah. And then Eagles started hitting it, and I probably would have nearly did die for that band. So it's just I was all in on it, and I was like trying to be all in on the uni as well. A couple of years in, like the one of the higher ups at the time sort of pulled me into the office and he was like, look, you know, you need to make some choices here, because Eagles were doing we just signed with Lockjaw.
Yeah.
And we were doing our first like month long effort of a tour.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was supposed to be writing the dissertation. At the same time as like, I'd used all my student loans up and just got this crappy little sort of building to record out of. So yeah. It was like, I was trying to be these like three different things at once, and like the uni were pretty aware about it, but they sort of like pulled me in and said like the ultimatum is, you know, you need to drop something because you need to like pick your attendance up.
That's fair enough. Yeah,
so I was like, oh well, you know, I've been here 2.5 years and I've done well enough to, you know, justify staying on. Can I not take this last like 6 months to kind of do it my own way a little bit? I'll still submit the work, I'll still, and they were like no. So I was like, oh well, I'm not cancelling this tour, so
oh, fuck
yeah. So that was the end of uni for me. So I didn't. It was 2.5 years in that, so it was just around when you're supposed to start like handing dissertations in and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then my logic at the time was like, well, look, I've done, you know, music at college. Like I'm technically four and a half years into a music education here, and I'm going on tour, and I've got a little recording space.
Yeah,
and like I'm busy enough there to, you know, sort of warrant it as a result of the education. So yeah. I was like, well, I'm kind of at the point that I've been trying to get to. So why would I like cancel out these points that I've been, you know, trying to
stuff
get
you've worked hard
in.
On to get to? Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so uni had to go at that point.
I, you know what? I've got a huge amount of respect for that, because the fact is that education, I know that you're eventually looking at getting a certificate, or
yeah,
you know, you're looking at getting your degree, but actually the point is to fucking learn stuff.
Yeah,
the point is that you want to expand your own knowledge and to educate yourself. So as long as you've done that, then that's all right. You don't need to have a qualification to say it. I don't know. I've always thought that, but it's a bit of a controversial.
Yeah, and they're going to be well aware of it. They're going to be like, because most of them are either like active in the industry or like, you know, former industry professionals. So like they're going to be well aware of that situation, and they're going to feel conflicted about it, because
absolutely
they've got their numbers to meet, but at the same time they hopefully want what's best for the students as well. So in situations like that, like I could tell the guy Ian. Ian Carmichael. He was really kind about it, and I could tell that, like, you know, he had empathy for the actual situation. He wasn't just like, the numbers aren't right, like, I'm coming down on you like a ton of bricks. It was look, you know, this is the situation. And it was like, you could tell that he had empathy for it, and you could tell that, like, he understood what was going on in the situation. It wasn't just like, uni comes first. It was like, yeah, like, I can see that it's a quandary. Because what are you here for? A qualification or a job?
Yeah, precisely. So, and if you can get the job through that.
Yeah.
So did you throw everything into egos and into recording at that point then?
Yeah, more so on the ego side of things.
Yeah.
It was.
You toured quite heavily for a bit. Was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still broken. Like, I'm still just not a complete human being from that.
I think no one really appreciates how hard it is to just stay in a van with a small group of people for that long as well. Like, yeah. Not sleeping and all that kind of thing. You know, it's hard.
I was young and insistent as well. So there was no, like, wiser voice within me saying, like, look, dude, you know, if you get a good night's sleep now and then you take it easy for the next couple of days, like, you'll be all right.
Do you feel that you've learned a lot from that now?
Yeah. It's one of those, like, I'm sure everyone has their own equivalent version of it, but it's like, oh, it was really hard, but at the same time I probably, like, needed it to happen so that like, I can function as an adult now. And
it's an interesting thing, actually. I think part of personal growth is that sometimes you have to push yourself to breaking point and do something really stupid or foolish in order to realize.
You need to, like, know where the point is as well, like, especially when you're like 19, you don't know where the point is because you're invincible.
Absolutely.
So you just, yeah, I mean, at least in my case, it was just push until, like, those points were definitely met.
Well, see, you're juggling a huge amount at the moment, though, as well. So do you find that easier now that you know a bit closer where your breaking point is? Like, do you feel like when it's coming?
Like, for the most part, but as you get older, like, your limits change as well. So, like, sometimes, especially, like, in the last couple of years, and, you know, discovered new limits that, like, I didn't know were there because you know, as a consequence of getting older, as, you know, just, you know, the natural progression of life, I suppose. But it is like an ingrained habit of, even though I do, like, find these breaking points, I'm always still naively searching for them anyway.
Like, your personal best, it's like, right, let's see how far I can go with this idea. I completely understand that. I always take too much on, and then I get overwhelmed and burnt out, and it's been a constant cycle of that through my entire life, and it's just interesting to see how far down that rabbit hole we can fall.
very far but
I'll tell you what, you learn an awful lot from it. I had a real period of burnout last year where I got to a point where I just couldn't do anything. And I had to drop all my stuff, but in picking stuff back up slowly since then, it's been interesting because I've had a lot more ideas and a lot more. I'm thinking a lot more creatively about things, and although I haven't spent time ruminating on things I need to change, I've noticed I've gone, oh, hang on, actually, that'd be better if I do this, or that'd be better if I do that. So although it maybe wasn't the greatest thing to ever do, and maybe taking a bit less on would have been a good idea, I do feel like I've learned a hell of a lot from it.
Yeah.
And I'm growing as a person out of it as well. So,
no, 100%. Yeah. Like, you know, when you do reach those limits, like, it's quite natural for you to just break as a person. So then once you've broken, you got to put yourself back together. So,
and destruction is the biggest, the first form of creation, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there it is. There it is. But no, I totally empathize with that. And like you say, it is about, once you have got to that point, it is about, like, slowly taking things back on.
Yeah.
Like, and sort of, like you say, rebuilding from there.
Well, I'll fast forward a little bit in the Ed Hall timeline then. But so you were working recording studio, was it Head Over, Head Above?
Oh, Head Sounds, yeah.
Head Sounds, yeah. So that was,
it had like 10 different names. I was just never content with the name.
No, fair enough. So that was obviously quite a big point in life, right? So you'd spent a long time building that up,
yeah,
and, you know, scrapping together the equipment for that.
Yeah.
So tell us what happened with that.
At which point, I mean, it was around for like 5 years, you know. Like, I think got that place up and running like second year of uni, so before the ultimatum. So I think it had like a year of momentum at that point. And then I think it wasn't until I was like 23 that things went a bit south of it. So
yeah.
Yeah, like which period do you mean? Do you mean like the...
The ending, I guess, is what I'm alluding to.
I thought so.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of the good stuff that you did while you were there. So was there anything great that you recorded? Anything you were really proud of from that time?
God, loads of stuff. You could probably hear the dog barking in the back at the moment.
Dogs are welcome on the podcast too.
He's just having his say. He's a pretty interesting guy when you give him time.
But yes, was there anything you were really proud of?
God, yeah, loads. We did, have you heard of Black Art? They were like a hardcore band. They were a lot like Chariot.
Yeah.
They were like a sort of a heavier, more like fundamental version of Chariot. Like they were absolutely sick. I did quite a few like bits of recording with them. And it's not something I'd ever like appreciate as an audiophile, but it's like, that sort of period in time and like how good they were was just like where I really wanted to be in life. So that was always amazing having them recorded an album by a band called Southpaw Fakers.
Cool.
Who Eagles did quite a bit of touring with them early on. And they did a couple of EPs that are just like brilliant, brilliant, like dirty, gritty pop punk kind of stuff, but not like pop punk, just.
But just in that kind of poppy, melodic.
And did an album with them that's just never came out.
Oh, fuck.
They got it. Yeah, they got it to the point where the vocalist was supposed to come and do his parts. And I think, you know, they just split up for whatever reasons. But that album, even by today's standards, would have just been like, sick. I keep trying to talk them into finishing it off.
Or like releasing part of it, maybe.
You don't have to tour. You don't have to do anything else. Just finish it.
You've already done the work and spent the money on it. Just put it out there.
Yeah, like even by today's standards, it was like... really, really good, like pop punk album. there's loads of stuff. I absolutely loved it, and that was where I started getting asked to like master stuff as well. And it's like, well, I have a basic understanding of what mastering is, and I'll take it on.
Yeah,
and it's like because you know, especially like back then, things weren't as well marketed and as well documented and as well branded as things are now. So it's like more often than not, it was just a DIY band was like, do we know anyone that could master it? It's like, oh, well, that guy, I think he has a studio. Should we see if he does mastering? Like that's much more how it was.
And yeah.
I just kept getting mastering job after mastering job. I was like, oh, I've got a bit of a fire for this.
Sweet. That's so, really good.
Yeah. I love that studio to bits, but again, it's one of those like, in the back of my mind, I was like, can't stay here forever. And I was like having a bit of a dilemma about what I wanted to do about the studio. And I was like, well, if I sell everything and like, you know, release everything that I've put into it, then I'd like have this sort of like baseline to start from again. Because I was just with everything that Egos had been through and were going through, I just like sort of hit a point. And then it wasn't but like a couple of weeks later that everything got burgled.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, well, you don't have that to work from now. It's like, oh, right, so this is point zero.
So you had the space and you'd been working on it for absolutely years.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't anything like, you know, phenomenal or crazy good. It's just, it was the best that could have been done with it under the circumstances kind of thing. But it had a special vibe because, you know, Andy Dazzler?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was a studio a couple of iterations before him. But I first found out about that space because he was running Substance Studios.
Right.
One of his earliest studios. And that was before I even knew how to press record. That was the college band.
Oh, really?
So it was in that space.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from one thing to another, it changed hands a few times.
Yeah.
But then it was available. And I was like, oh, well, I already know it's been used for a recording space. But another bit of punk rock history for you there, Andy Dazzler.
Yes, Andy Dazzler is still a great part of the Manchester punk scene. Oh, he's got his own studio now as well, isn't
he? He's the backbone of it.
I can't think what his studio's called. I know he does...
Through the Roof.
Through the Roof?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and he's just done Infested's new... I think it's an album.
He's been up to quite a bit recently,
hasn't
he? Yeah, he's been taking on some more work.
Yeah.
He also... I think one of the best things with Dazzler is that he does it at a really, really cost price. Like, he does... He really knows what he's doing. He's got his head switched on.
Yeah.
But he's also really aware of the budget constraints that DIY bands have got.
Yeah.
And I know that he works hard to make it as inclusive for everybody as he can.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll always catch him about with flyers as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad he's cracking on. Because he's so talented.
Yeah, like, I know. Fucking so amazing talented. Drummer. But yeah, the headline there was that you had your studio and then it was burgled and they took everything, right?
That's, yeah, that's pretty much it. And
so you burnt to the ground, was, start again.
Well, yeah. And probably like a pretty rational, normal, everyday person said, well, did you have insurance? And the answer was yeah. But it was one of those situations where, you know, I was really trying to learn how to juggle everything on my own. And I was getting emails about, you know, the insurance renewal. I was like, oh, well, can't afford it now, but you know, hope and a prayer, and like just keep working, and like hopefully I can pay it off in a couple of weeks. And like within trying to save up for the renewal, like, yeah, it had lapsed. Fuck. And I was like, well, you know, I was never gonna turn around and ask someone else to pay for the renewal, even though it was such an important, like, detrimental thing, but I was just like a bit too proud to do it.
Yeah.
So as it had lapsed, it was like, yeah, burgled.
So they took in this short period where you've got no insurance, that's what everything... Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. See, my...
Fucking life.
As well, it's one of those situations that makes you come up with all your own conspiracy theories as well. It's like, oh, well, did the insurance sell the paperwork because they knew it had lapsed? Or did someone, like, plan it? Because it was... The way that the building was laid out, like, yeah, it wasn't just some... like Joe off the street that needed some beer money. It was like, it was a methodical burglary because, yeah, it was brick and then it was an internal studded wall.
Yeah.
But from the brick, it was gated windows. Like, you know, those metal fences that go over windows.
Yeah.
I forget what they're called.
So it was
metal fence, window, internal wall.
Yeah.
So it was like, they very neatly like cut out the grid.
Christ.
Open that up.
So it must have been someone
who'd
been there before.
Yeah. It was so methodically well done. Like, I'm not saying it was like someone I knew, but it was.
No, but potentially planned. Someone who is like familiar with the building and maybe knew your insurance renewal. But then again, actually, you know what? If this is a strange train of thought to go down. But if I were going to burgle my mate's place, I'd do it while he had insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's good to know.
Well, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to do that. I mean, obviously, I'm now in your mastering suite and just eyeing everything up. I'm going to have the lamp before I have the recording gear, though. But if it was someone you knew, they'd do it while you had insurance, wouldn't they? That's
I mean, people are complicated and strange. Like, it's something that you just I just have to, because I have no answers to it.
It's such a strange thing as well. Like, I used to. Well, we were talking earlier today. I've had some strange things happen today. I woke up at 1 o'clock when I was making
Yeah, you've
up
had a right day.
And then I got in my car and my car wouldn't start. And I was like, oh, fuck. But the thing is that I swear that I used to always feel like things were happening to me. Or like I was having a bad day because the universe was against me. Now I'm just like, this shit happens all the time to everybody.
Yeah.
This is just stuff that happens. Like, my car wouldn't start and I managed to sort it out very quickly. But it's like... Yeah, I used to feel like it was sort of hard done by and that these things were happening for some kind of reason or that I'd caused it in some way. And
yeah,
I think just some shit's beyond our control and we can't do anything about it. And
yeah. See, that's something I've thought about like, probably too much because,
yeah,
I mean, everyone's looked into like law of attraction and like the associated...
Sending out positive vibes to the universe and it brings it.
Yeah, like manifestation and like all that. And it's something that I just had to like give up on because you'll drive yourself crazy thinking that like you've sabotaged everything for yourself and like life just happens and like things just happen and you make your peace with it. That's all I can say.
Stuff does happen. I don't know, on the other end of it though, sometimes I feel that when really positive stuff's happened to me, I feel like I almost owe a debt to people or things. Like, I ought to do, if when positive things happen to me, I feel that I ought to give positivity back out and try and be grateful for some of the stuff that's happened around me. I don't know, I've gotten a bit more spiritual recently for confusing reasons, and maybe that's that's part of it. I'm normally really cynical.
No, I like all that sort of train of thought and explore it a lot myself. But yeah, with what you were saying about when things are going well, like the little sort of tricks you play yourself. Like, whenever things are going well with me, I'm just like, two things. Like, I think things are always going to be great.
Yeah.
And I'm always wondering, like, when's it going to end?
Yes.
So it's like...
Yeah, when is the bad stuff going to happen now, please? Yeah.
The complete fucking stupid, naive ignorance of like, oh, things are going well, it's just always going to be like this. And also like, I'm actually craving the relief of things going bad so that it's like the apprehension of things going bad is off the table.
There's anxiety for you.
There it is.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, good things pass, bad things pass, everything passes, things change.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, we'll take a little bit of a music break, but afterwards I want to hear all about what your current projects are and things like that. But,
that's sick.
So something that you've been... So obviously we're sat in... It's all Silk Mastering House, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's,
and then you've now got All Silk Recording Studio as well, which I'm so fucking excited about.
Yeah, I love that place.
But you've been working with a lot of new bands from a lot of different genres and stuff like that. But is there anything recently that you're really proud of that you've worked on that you'd like, well, you think would appeal to our listeners as well?
Yeah, 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 100%. Do you want me to like...
Think of a song, elaborate? Tell us.
Yeah. It's got to be... I've been working with Swears for quite a while. And they're...
I've heard of them, but maybe I've heard of them through you.
Yeah, that's possibly, it. Like, yeah. I'm just constantly like wondering and shocked that they're not doing like our circuit as well as the circuit that they are doing.
It's interesting. Just, you don't often get crossover with some bands.
No, yeah. Like, you know, some of them wear leather jackets and like they're quite sort of rocky, but they're just DIY as they come. Like they'd have gone down well with like any of the hardcore bands of like the last 20 years or so.
Yeah.
They're just, they're absolutely brilliant. I love them to bits. I've been doing their stuff like top to bottom. So in between like the last recording spaces that I've sort of worked out of and starting this one, I've just sort of elected myself to be freelance wherever and whenever I could record something.
Of course,
I would.
Yeah.
And then here would be like the sort of bread and butter of everything. But I picked them up when I was freelancing and we recorded everything at a place called Prospect Studios.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. Their large live room is outstanding. It's just like, it's a concrete floor, like brick wall, but it's huge. So like you're not dealing with nasty reflections or anything, but
Where's
everything's
Prospect?
Just very open. Sorry?
Where's Prospect?
Bradford.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And like the guys that run it are amazing as well. They're just like... absolute gents, and like the audio world's like a funny one for personalities like coming together, but those those guys there are just like they're my brothers, like
nice.
And recorded Swears out of there and then sort of mixed and mastered them here, and I've done four singles with them. I'll sort that out for you. Done four singles with them and they're doing an EP at the new place. Just for the listeners, I'm gonna sort out this
well,
mic
I tell
stand.
You what, we're about to switch to a song anyway, aren't we?
So yeah, play Swears. Swears are brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Cabin Fever by Swears.
I'd
Are you laughing at
you
my
didn't?
Fake radio intro? Yeah.
I think you should do that, but we should have all the before and all the after as well. Oh.
I did stick that in recently. I was editing a Good Boy Blue Monday podcast.
Yeah.
And we'd gone, and this is this track. You can listen to it. And Graham went, da-da-da-da-da-da. And like, it was awesome. It's so weird recording when you're not always listening to the song as well.
Yeah.
It's great fun. But I don't know. This is all about fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's something that you've done fairly recently?
Quite recently. I think it was probably like the end of summer just gone.
Sweet, okay.
Well, it was,
I remember seeing it come up on...
Everything.
Yeah. So let's see, what else have we been up to? I know this is skipping a little bit forward in time, but you've got the mastering suite here.
Yeah.
Which is fucking amazing. But tell me about the recording studio. I only saw it come up recently. I had no idea you were doing it.
Yeah, me either.
So where's the studio come up from?
So... I was freelancing for quite a while, just like sort of paying rates at various studios or wherever, like varying quality of studios as well. And I was trying really, really hard to like come to like agreements with people that like ran the studios of, you know, how I could anchor down there a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things, like I could just never really make it work to everyone's, bandwidth or whatever. So I was a little bit sort of like at a lost end, really. I was like, well, I really want to record people because I get asked to do it. And
yeah.
It's like, I just love it.
Because you're
good
at it. Yeah.
Thank you. It's what I want to do. It's what I want to spend my time doing now.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't really like find anywhere that was, you know, reasonable and long term. And then Rob, who I play tunes with now, he works at a place called The Whipping Kitten.
Right.
Which is like a really nice, like sort of cocktail and independent ale, kind of craft ale kind of place.
Cool. Is that in town here or?
It's Rottenstall.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Rosendale in Rottenstall. It's really near Cat's Cradle.
I was going to say, the only thing I know from Rottenstall at all is Cat's Cradle Tattoo Studio, which is Holly Dixon and John Holt of Fair Dues fame.
Yeah, they're really good there as well.
They're so fucking good. I've got a couple of mine done there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, I've got my back, Holly did. And honestly, you know how tattoos hurt a lot?
Yeah.
Generally. And anyone who tells you otherwise is probably bullshitting. Mm. Like, but she tattooed my back and honestly it felt like a cat was purring on me. Like, she's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Right, really quick.
Yeah.
As well. And yeah, she's fucking amazing. Like, massive shout out to Holly, she's incredible. And
100% definitely.
They've got really good coffee as well.
Oh yeah. John wouldn't have anything less, I don't think.
No. You have excellent coffee here as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Very good.
My folks went away to Italy and it's like just ridiculously cheaper to get coffee from there.
Massively, yeah.
So over the years, I've just become a fan of like standard 5-strength Lavazza, and like my mum sent me a message like, so is 9-strength 4K?
There's a what now?
There's a 9-strength Lavazza.
Holy fuck! Because I drink the 5-strength Lavazza as well. That's
it's
my favourite
one.
It's the best, but you've got to wait until it comes up in the multi packs.
Yeah,
because it's quite pricey, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh man, that's
But yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, so where were we? I completely forgot.
Jones
in
on coffee,
about.
Obviously, you know. we were talking about the studio, so Rottenstall.
So yeah,
it's
around the corner from there, and it's like a really nice bar downstairs. Like, just all the drinks they serve are just dangerously good. but they had this whole like sort of top floor that wasn't in use. I think it used to be like a dance studio.
Yeah.
Because when I got in there, it was just like one side of the wall was just all mirrors.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, like made the place feel like
not
massive.
Ideal on the reverb front, presumably.
Yeah. I mean, I had to work around that eventually, but we just did like a little session in there because we wanted to do some playthrough videos because we're trying to be a band and that.
So what's this project called?
Oh, that's the Edgarville stuff.
I was going to say, this is Edgarville,
which,
right?
On the record, like, I do not want to keep that band name. I'm literally being forced into keeping that name. Absolutely hate it. Like, I hate saying it. Yeah, so that's the band, and we needed to do like a little bit of a playthrough thing. So I just took some mobile rig up there, and it was like his suggestion to use that space. And as soon as I stood in there, I just turned to him. I was like, "Man, like, this would make a ridiculous studio.
Yeah.
Because it's the live room section of it's like huge. It's like 27 by 23 feet, like Jesus. Massive 15 feet ceilings, sexy beams that are like just a must. And it was just like the ideal space already before any work was done.
Yeah, okay.
So I literally started pestering the owner of the place like every week. I think she only said yeah because I just wouldn't leave her alone. I was just like, please, 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 please.
Okay, so you've got a massive live room there, and then have you got a separate engineering room? Or
There's a control room joined to it, and it's like above it as well. Something else I really liked about it was, so there's the control room, and then to the right of that, there's like this little games and lounge room. And in the games and lounge room, that's the window.
Yeah.
But it overlooks the live room bird's eye. So instead of like being level with it, like you see everything, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's one of those spaces, like if you're into it, like you'd walk into it and just be like, oh my God, how's this not a studio?
Yeah, brilliant.
So that kind of, I wouldn't say it fell on my lap, but it sort of came at a time where I was like at a lost end of how to manage like the freelance side of things. Yeah. I was just like, right, I'm just going to crack on with this.
Okay.
And then did. So got that open a few weeks ago. End of a year, close to Christmas, never an ideal time to launch any business in the world.
No, of course. Yeah. But I'm so chuffed for you. Here. It seems like a really good thing to be doing. I mean, the space that you've got here for the mastering suite is amazing, but the fact that you're going to have a studio as well is just great news.
Yeah.
And then that gives you a real... I don't know, I'd view it as you now have a real foundation from which to build more from that. Now that you've got the spaces in which to do it, you can have bands come to you.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just that thing that, like, I think audio engineers as a personality profile, like, want that accountability top to bottom.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of the time, if you are, like, working with someone else, then there's, like, split responsibility.
Yeah,
but when you're really into it, the way that, like, a lot of audio engineers are, like, just that, like, building things from top to bottom now and just like being there for the whole process, it's like, yeah, it's
where I wanted to be for a long time. Well, you strike me as someone who's got a lot of focus as well, like real focus, real attention to detail, which obviously comes through in your recordings and the work that you do. But
thank you. Appreciate it.
You know, I think that kind of level of responsibility and perfectionism and single-mindedness is actually a major advantage with the kind of industry that you're working in. If you know what I mean? Like definitely. People come to you because they know they can rely on you to have that.
Level
of attention.
Well, I mean, like, there's no more ideal circumstance for me than like just being booked to work, because then there's nothing else to worry about then. So all you need to do is just turn up and just be entirely involved in what is in front of you. Like, there's no greater feeling than when you've got like a band in the studio and it's like whatever time you start in, 10-11 o'clock, and like you're getting started and it's like, right, this is all I have to think about all day.
Yeah,
just like how this is going, every little detail about it, and that's the dream for me, I think.
That sounds so good. What do you enjoy the most about doing that? Is it just the focus, or are there any specific aspects of recording that you really love?
I don't know. As long as I've been doing it, I don't think I've ever properly tried to articulate what it is about it. I think there's so much about it. I love. I really love like drum recording. So like. Setting tones, tuning drum kits, and like applying like little tricks and like
the really
microphone
detailed
placements.
Little tweaks.
Yeah, 100%. Like, just all about that. And the reward in it though is when you like you say to a band, it's like, yeah, right, I think I'm done now. Like, what do you think? And then like they sit down and play the drum kit, and then they're like, yeah,
whoa,
like, that's the reward in itself. Never mind like all the stages after it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the right place for my mind to be, I think.
That's really lovely. But what about is there anything you find particularly challenging, whether that's in recording itself or with working with bands? Because obviously working with bands is a notorious nightmare.
Yeah, it can be. There's nothing I find like unbearable with bands. I like bands to have like a good understanding of like reality, so like there's no like major egos involved like stuff like that, but I honestly don't really come across that very often. That's why I gel so well with Swears, because they're just so trusting.
Yeah,
like they're really trusting, they're really open minded. Like they don't, you know, they're not like militant about any part of the process. They say what they need to say when they need to say it, and they say it well. So it's like that's like the sort of perfect working relationship.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. What about something that I'm really aware of with a lot of bands, particularly DIY bands that are relatively new to recording. Mm. Obviously, some of them will have a fair bit of experience from other bands, but you must have some people come in where they're recording for the first time ever.
Mm.
Obviously, nerves are quite a big thing as well.
Mm.
And people don't always play as well as they could do under pressure, or if you're trying to get the most out of a band, you have to be able to manage those nerves. Is there anything that you... I mean, how do you get around that? Do you find that difficult?
I don't know, because I haven't... I haven't been in that situation for a really long time. I got asked to go back to Shamrock Recording Studio to do a bit of freelance stuff there for a band called The Irony, and it was literally like fresh out of college, 17-year-olds, I was like, whoa, like, didn't really do jobs like this anymore, because I tend to work with bands that have been doing it a while, and I was like, oh, like, this is like a little bit novel. Novel, is novel the word? I feel like novel's not a word in my head anymore.
No, novel's a word.
Yeah. Weird. There was a novelty to it. I think that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, like, they've literally never recorded at all.
Wow, yeah.
And they were like, you know, like, still new to their instruments. But I think, like, one thing that audio engineers tend to do in that circumstance is overcompensate.
Mm.
It's like, are you okay? Sometimes you can like pander to it too much. Like, unless there's an obvious answer like right in front of you for those kind of situations, it's a little bit like, do what you can to put people at ease and just accept that certain elements of the recording session are the way they are.
Mm.
It's like, it depends what level of analysis you want to start applying to it as an engineer as well. Because if you've got someone that's only been playing drums like a few years and it's the first session in front of you, then all you can really say is like a couple of little hints or little bits of help to them. But you can't reinvent the wheel. You can't like take them and say like, right, for the next hour, you're going to practice your flams to a metronome at 140. There's a process to being good enough to record that, like, sometimes you just got to accept that people aren't quite there in a session.
Mm.
In that case, you don't need to say anything. You just need to be polite and, like, sort of work through it and just get the best out of what you can. Because I think that's, like, a summary of the job is, you know, you're presented with a certain, you know, set of circumstances. It's not the word I'm looking for, but you're presented with what you're presented with, and you just got to make the best of it.
Absolutely.
Like, top to bottom, like, everything you can. Like, if there's something you can say to someone that's going to help them, and then you say it, but, like, you don't want to be, like, in someone's ear at the same time. Like, are you okay? See, like, the last take, it sort of had it, but just with a little bit more this. And then, like, before you know it, you're just, like, everyone's stressed.
Fiddling.
So
I think certainly, I went over to the Nave a couple of months ago with Andy Hawkins.
It's a really nice
recording
studio.
And something that was great about him was not only was he really professional, but he was just very, very, very calm.
It's a must. A
very dry sense of humour as well, which I really enjoyed. But, you know, he was...
Sounds like an engineer.
I think the being calm in the face of everything that's going on, when perhaps tensions are running a bit high as well, is a major advantage.
Yeah.
That was really good. What about, so for a band who are looking to record, what advice would you give to them before they go into the studio? Like, is there anything that they can do to prepare themselves?
There's so much that they can do. It just depends, like, how much they want to take on as part of the pre-production process.
Yeah.
It depends how they write songs. I think the main thing before they record is they want to establish what type of, like, recording personality they have. Are they a band that should record live together? Not necessarily all of it live together, but as much of it that anchors the feel of that band. Because you get it so many times where a band multi-tracks either to metronome or not to metronome, and it loses the essence of what they are.
So
they need to establish if they're, like, a band that should record live in a room or if they're a band that are multi-tracking. And if they're a multi-tracking band, then they have a lot of work to do that I think, like, a lot of people don't realise. Because when you're a multi-tracking band, you're playing as much to the metronome as you are to the rest of the band.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if
Which is completely different, right, to say how you'd be practising.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Well, then again, actually, that's a question. So obviously a lot of bands, they'll live close to each other and they'll have a practice room. They'll, you know, go once a week or whatever and do that. But then there's a few more bands popping up now who live in different places. I'm thinking
internet bands.
Yeah, like, I mean, the Effect Heuristic, they've got two of them in Scotland and three of them in Belgium and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, there was another group I was talking to recently who were all over the place. Mm. So they're writing individual pieces, demoing them, and then putting them together later. So presumably for them, actually, multitracking might be the easier
option. Yeah. If they were all to, like, band together and go into a studio, then they would, by the sounds of it, most likely be a multi-track band.
I'm thinking with bands like Almeida now as well. So they're all living in different places now. So maybe if they're more frequently used to practicing separately. I don't know. I'm just postulating.
Yeah, Almeida are almost 100,000% probably a multi-track band.
Oh, God, yeah. But they're the most technical...
Yeah, they're mad.
Absolute mess of wonderfulness on the planet, you know.
I was enjoying the new...
you toured a lot with them, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, yeah. I was enjoying the simplicity of the like the hardcore thing that they just released.
The new track.
It's very much a minute long, just like...
I think the video is just over a minute long, but there is a longer version of the track that they recorded, which is available on their Bandcamp now. Doing my little Lockjaw Records job there. but yeah, there is a longer version of it. I think that there is some more coming from them in the future. They're just insanely technical, aren't they? I love them.
But that's like something that bands need to be as aware of as possible. It's just, if you are a multi-track band, like, there is a huge workload before you even look at a studio.
Absolutely.
So, like, for a start, the drummer's probably like got the most amount of pressure on the shoulders for being a multi-track band, because whatever they lay down
is what everyone else plays
the feel.
To.
Yeah. So a drummer, if you're going to be recording multi-track, like, I'm telling you, you need to be sat there with the tempo maps in your ears, guide tracks in your ears, like hours a week on your own.
Fucking hell.
You have to be. If you're going to nail it, because, you know, I'm sure there's hundreds of bands out there say, like, no, you don't need to do that. But like those records that really sort of bring you in and like speak to you emotionally are like the ones that are like, you know, glued together well.
Yeah.
And for something to glue together well as a multi-track band, like you just need to be so in tune and aware of metronomes.
Absolutely. Which is a bit of an unusual thing, particularly if you're more of a live drummer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I take it, forgive my ignorance here, but I assume it's not that unusual to do the drums in a live room with the band around and then to track the other elements. Is that?
Oh, well, so the scenario would be like the band are playing as a guide track, but just in the headphones.
Yeah, that's quite
getting the drums down.
Normal, isn't it? Or is that?
It is, but that goes to what I was saying, like, if they're doing it to metronome, then like that's fine. If that's what they need to do to be comfortable, if that's how they feel they're going to get like the proper soul behind the recording. Mm. But if they're doing it and it's not to metronome, then it's just going to be like, I mean, rarely, seldom, sometimes a band gets it right multi-tracking without a metronome, but 9 times out of 10 it's just going to sound like just all over
mess.
The place.
No, that makes perfect sense.
So 100% establish like what kind of recording style you have, and if that means that you record a bunch of times and it doesn't go well but then you figure it out, then it's the way it is.
If people want to get a taste of what you're doing, are the live sessions one of the best places to look? Or
Well, the live sessions thing is like sort of like an in-house pro bono passion project kind of thing. So
we've
just been doing it in here, stripped back. Like, we've had loads of full bands come and do like stripped back versions of it.
Nice, yeah.
So they always sound like really nice, and like the setting and the mood of them is always really good.
I really like the style of them, because obviously we've been sponsoring a couple of them through Lockjaw Records,
indeed,
haven't we?
Have.
But I've been watching all of them as they come up, and it's such a wide range of different genres as well, which I love.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm going for, 100%. Yeah. I just want to meet everyone, just want everyone in. it's always just like usually a really nice like sort of mood to it. But if you're like a full band looking for a full band like live session, like it's a good reference, like we can do it very well.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really keen to get the live sessions done at the new studio, like full band.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's much more like, because full band live sessions, like, I don't know how into live sessions you are, but some audio tree sessions sound better than the album.
I love watching live sessions. I actually probably prefer, weirdly, I think watching live sessions is one of my biggest ways of consuming music nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of that came off just watching the the NPR Tiny Desk sessions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, those are fucking fantastic. Nice sessions. And what's there's a studio in Seattle as well. oh fuck, what's it called? You know, I'm on about, there's a Seattle studio that does loads and loads and loads of bands as they tour through. That's got a really good video live session. I will think of it. Bridge City.
They've done their like Such Gold and the really good punk rock bands.
But I think there's a real market to have something like that in the UK, you know?
Big time.
But I really, really, really love that. And it's also like, you know, you look at the different ways of promoting bands nowadays and you can record as much as you want, but the environment's different for it now. There's, you know, if you want to be successful, you need to be putting out singles, you need to be putting out live tracks, you need to be putting out videos.
Mm.
And surely, to me, one of the services you offer by doing a live session with a video attached to it, that's exactly what bands need.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Like, it only adds to what's already there.
Exactly. If you're a band looking to, you know, get more promotion and get further, that's a really quick, simple way of doing it.
Yeah.
And 100%. I'd encourage every band to be doing a live session.
Yeah.
But then partly that's also because for me, I tend to, I mean, sure, I listen to albums and stuff like that, but when I'm discovering new bands, what I want to see is what they're like live.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I don't
how
really
the
care
chemistry
what
is.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, there's some bands where they can be great on record, but a bit dull live.
Yeah.
Millencolin is the one that comes to mind weirdly there.
I've never seen them live. I couldn't comment.
Yeah, it's boring.
Not right.
yeah, they're very kind of monotone, if that makes any sense. But
vanilla
then
or something.
On the opposite end of it, you'll get bands where they've got a fucking fantastic album, but their live show's even better.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you would have caught the Penske File. They played Manchester Punk Festival and they played at Gulliver's in Manchester last year, I think.
Right.
Put them on.
Right.
But their live show is fucking stunning.
Is
and
it?
They're a band I'd love to see do a live session.
Yeah.
Because like their songs are great. They've, you know, they've got really good melodies, really good choruses, stuff like that. But I've never seen a band look so happy on stage. And just their joy and their happiness is really infectious. So get that in a live setting, but not in a recording.
Like there's it's a whole other beast, like doing sort of live sessions or like live recordings, because like the spill that you get of all the instruments like melding together and so like in the snare mic it's a spot mic, like if you were multi-tracking it'd just be 100% snare, but actually you got that 5% of guitar in there that technically you don't want, but when you mix everything together it's just got a whole other like energy to it. I think live sessions are a must for people now.
What about your own listening and stuff? What are you enjoying listening to at the moment?
I don't know.
It can be... Well, music's now work for you, isn't it? So do you...
Yeah, it's that weird crossover when you make your passion your everyday life.
You don't want to... I found that when I started doing more with kind of punk rock bands, I almost exclusively listen to hip-hop now.
Yeah, I love hip-hop, actually.
It kind of sets my time out differently. I'll go and listen to that instead of this, you know.
See, you know what? I'm guilty of being a bit of a nostalgia monster, of like listening to stuff that I already know.
You're not like a cheesy 80s guy though, are you?
No.
Good, right, thank God.
Just like albums that like I've been rinsing in the past. Like if I go to listen for pleasure now, it's almost like, you know, because I do so much work on stuff that I'm not familiar with, especially like at the time that the job comes on, it's like my mind's always sort of in that like new discovery mode of like everything that comes towards you is new.
Yeah.
So when it comes to listening for pleasure, like I tend to like revert to stuff that I know.
That's really interesting.
It's like it's comforting in a way.
Where you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're not listening because someone's gone, oh, this is really good. And it's like 100% I'm certain it's going to be really good, but it's going to take like 15 listens before I see where you're coming from.
That's really interesting, actually. I mean, that's probably kind of why I listen to hip hop and stuff like that, is because I find that because I'm thinking about punk rock all the time and thinking about those kinds of bands.
Yeah.
Whenever I listen to a new album, even if I'm trying to relax, I can't do it because there's almost like a little critical ear in my mind. I'm thinking, oh, what would these guys be like live? Who do they sound like? How
not to mention
work?
As a genre, it's pretty like demanding of your
attention. It's a bit adrenaline loaded, you know? So instead I tend to listen to like some really chilled out hip hop stuff I keep saying that my album of the year this year is Slow Tie. It's fucking amazing, and that's one that I
would love to listen to him and love to discover him, but every time it comes to sitting down and like and also as well like a big part of the job is looking for stuff that you would love to work on. So it's
So
I'm constantly like trawling through like new stuff, but I'm listening to it from a perspective of like, you know, would this band enjoy it?
Yeah.
And do I enjoy it? And is it that synergy? And then that's what I'm searching for all the time. So that's like, that accounts for all the sort of research and listening I do to new bands anyway.
Yeah.
Is looking for stuff that...
Well, there's an interesting one for you then. So maybe outside of the smaller bands, imagine that you could work with a larger band. Who would be your dream band to work with?
Oh, God. Or... I don't know.
Because the thing is...
That's such a good question.
Say like beyond the realms of possibility as well. Like, yeah. You know.
I would absolutely love to do like Knock Loose... Every Time I Die, Counterparts, like I would have a blast doing
Counterparts.
Them. They'd have a great time doing it.
There's a bit on the end of, what is it? There's a, I think it's 9to5 Ethics, second track off Blankets of Denial, the Ego's album. There's a bit of guitars on the end that I was listening to the other day and I thought it was reminding me of Counterparts, but it took me ages to work out what it was making me think of.
They're wicked, like... Definitely have like the palette for that kind of sound, but then I'd also love to record like Algernon Cadwallader or something, just something like really emotional. God, I don't know, there's so many, like the thing about answering that question as well is like it's hard to answer for some bands that you'd love recording, but at the same time the person that recorded it already did such a good job that
you
like,
don't want to
like even go near that.
Don't want to fuck with that. Yeah.
Like I'd love to say Converge, but to be fair, like I don't think I could do Converge any better than it's ever been done.
Of course not. Yeah. No, but it's kind of like, I don't know, it's always good to have something to aspire to, isn't it? It's kind of like
1,000%.
We were sat around, we had a Lockjaw Records meeting in Belgium a while back, and obviously, again, like Ed, you've known Lockjaw a lot longer than I have, and I now work with Lockjaw Records, but you guys signed with them fucking years ago, right?
Yeah, we were one of the. I think when Rob had pretty much just taken it over.
Yeah,
it was just like, boom, let's go.
Oh, do you know what? I interviewed Rob a while back. It's on the website, but I think he'd said how it was seeing you guys like as Egos at the Door live was part of what was one of the first things he did with Lockjaw. I can't remember the whole story to it, but it was all woven in together, wasn't
it? I'd been pestering him a little bit.
Yeah.
But when we met in person was when they were cracking on with, like, I think it was the first Drones campaign.
Yes, so
I think it was the first Drones album. Like, Daly was still singing for him. I think they were a three-piece as well at the time. And we played with them 4TNS in Manchester.
Yes.
When Egos were just about finding like our sort of comfort zone of playing and like what we sounded like.
Yeah.
And I think we were pretty much done with an album and Rob was there and I was just like, love your label. Please resign us.
Yeah. And that's exactly
that's
what happened.
That's where it went from.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. But yeah, so we sat down in Belgium earlier in the year and we had the nicest like label meeting. Because the thing is, we've got 2 in Belgium and 3 in England, and we all live...
Yeah, you're a team now.
We all live really fucking far away from each other. So we were like, right, okay, let's get together, have a meeting. So we, drove to Belgium. And we were sat at Cedric's place in the sunshine with this absolutely wonderful lunch that Valerie had made us. And we kind of jokingly brainstormed what bands we'd want to work with if we could work with anyone.
All right.
Now, initially, obviously, we were talking about the smaller bands that would be...
That you'd
likely
to grow and
to
stuff.
Work with us,
yeah.
Which was really, really good fun. And we ended up with like a whiteboard stuck to a fence and we're like, writing it up like an actual meeting.
Metallica.
And then we all went really quiet and we were kind of like, well, if we could work with anybody, like beyond the realms of possibility. And all 5 of us just went, well, Propaganda, really.
Yeah.
We were all
I mean, I was in anticipation, but at the same time, I'm not surprised.
Well, it's one of those things. We were all sat there going, well, none of it. We're not.
Yeah.
We're not at the level of Propaganda at all. And we'd probably, that will never happen. But so nice that we were all united on that idea.
I think unless they're going to go with like Epitaph or someone, I kind of feel like Propaganda could sign with anyone.
Well, you never know what they're like, but we're not in the... but yeah, I think we were like,
yeah, but you'd up, I mean, if it came on the table, you'd up
God,
your
fucking
game.
Hell, can you imagine?
Yeah,
imagine. You say that, we got to work with Much the Same recently. We released their album in the summer.
Yeah,
and that
Wicked.
Was such a fucking good album as well.
Yeah,
I was expecting it to be good and then it came along and I was like, Shit, no, this is really good. I've been listening to that loads. But that's still, nice. I personally, I'm really big on the smaller bands. Although, you know, if a Wilhelm Scream want to come and do anything with us, then, you know, I'll make an exception.
I fully think you'd nail it as well. Like, I think Rob's been doing it long enough and, like, you've got a strong enough team now where, like, if the bigger bands did want to, like, come to Lockjaw, I 100% think you'd nail it.
I don't even want to think about it. But we're working with some really great. Like, no. But I don't know. We just try our best. You know what I mean? It's all about. I think one thing for us that's nice is we don't just focus on helping out our bands. We try and help as much as we can.
Yeah.
And that's for us. That's our ethos. Is we just want the whole scene to grow.
Yeah.
It's not about.
Yeah.
You know, obviously great if our bands do well. You know, that's kind of the fucking point, isn't it? But
yeah,
we all just want, you know, we want the festivals to do well. We want you to do well with what you're doing. We want other people to.
Yeah, well, that's why I love having Lockjaw involved with the live sessions, because with us doing it stripped back for so long, it's like it's attracted so many different walks of life.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, we work with someone like Livy Kay, who's like ridiculously talented kid. She's like she's an actress, like a model, like a singer.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not like the typical punk rock sort of thing to do, but she's come along and like absolutely nailed it, like beautiful voice. And it's like Lockjaw Records is like attached to it, and it's like I enjoy like bringing that sort of Lockjaw logo and name into like a wider sort of,
yeah,
because that's what the live sessions do.
Exactly, yeah. But that's kind of for us as well. It's showing that, you know, we like being involved with it, because it shows that we're not just hemmed down to this tiny little skate punk genre that people sort of think we are. You know what I mean? Like, it shows that we all love an enormous range of different genres. It's like there's so much good stuff out there to listen to.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, it's been absolutely fucking wonderful chatting to you.
Yeah, cheers for coming.
And also, I'm really enjoying where we are. Like, for me, driving north of Manchester, so what, we're about, I live in South Manchester, and it took me about 45 minutes, I think.
That's good, actually.
So yeah, you're not far out of Manchester in general.
No.
So if there's any bands up here,
yeah,
swing by.
Jump on the M65 and you're here.
Exactly. But yeah, it's really nice for me up here, because it's proper north as well.
Yeah.
Like going up down sort of Norwich way, this is really different. Yeah, like, you know, proper hilly. It's got like, you know, stone walls as you go around all the rolling hills, sheep everywhere. It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, I couldn't live in a city.
No.
It'd probably be so much better for my career, but I just don't have the personality to withstand the city.
No, fuck it.
Like, and I need the quiet too,
you know,
much.
People like look forward to coming out to somewhere different to record, like being in a different environment to what they're used to as well. Yeah. I think that's a really nice, it's a way of getting a vibe for where you are, and it's quite relaxed up here. Like a bit more air, fresh air.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oxygen.
But yeah, to round things off, obviously you've done so much in the last 2 years in terms of getting the mastering suite and the studio together and all that.
Mm.
What's your dream for the next few years? Like, what's your ambition?
Next few years.
Already achieved it almost?
Yeah, I've achieved the foundation that I wanted to work from. But ideally, I just want to be, I mean, I think I said it earlier on, like the dream for me is just having a place to be and a project to work on.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's all I need.
That's a beautiful dream to have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been personally, like on the business end of things, it's just been investment, investment, investment. Like everything that comes in goes straight back into it. So it'd be nice to like be able to say to my girlfriend, like, oh, we're going for a meal tonight.
Ooh.
Because I've not been able to do anything like that for years. Like, this has, you know, consumed everything.
Yeah.
So the dream for me over the next few years would just be, like, get stable, be able to treat the people I care about well, and just have something to work on every day. That's it.
That's fantastic. But that's a really good... Do you know what? That's what I like about that. That's an achievable dream, I think. You know, you'll get there.
Yeah.
You will, for sure.
I hope so. I very much hope so.
But yeah, thanks so much for talking to me. But
thanks for coming.
To round things up, also to any listeners, there's a reason this sounds, I am expecting this to be the best sounding podcast we ever do. Because we actually have a professional setup here. Ed's recording it, not me, which is a nice bonus. But I'll put some contact details for how to get hold of you in all the show notes and things like that. But to finish off the podcast, I'd like to put some music in to play us out.
Yeah.
So now, here's a choice for you. I think this should be some of your own music. rather than stuff you've recorded.
Oh God, no.
Now, obviously, my preference is for something from Egos at the Door. But yeah. What about something from Edgarville? Is there something you're really happy with at the moment?
Not that's out. See, like we've jumped off on the complete other end of the spectrum of like. So you see this a lot in audio of like bands fall in love with the potential of a release or the potential of a song.
Absolutely.
So much to the point that they can't let go of it.
Yeah.
So we've been working on an album for like coming up to 4 years now or something like that. And like very much falling in love with the potential of it. Like every little detail's like sort of had to be okay. And really, really, really happy with it. It's definitely like the best thing I've ever done and probably ever will do. It's like almost like a signing off thing, like, right, finally made something that's good. Yeah. I can rest easy now. But it's not out, so egos.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because we can play something you've recorded if you prefer, but I do think, I don't know, I just really love Egos at the Door, mate.
Good. I'm glad it was for something.
Do you have a favourite track you'd like to play, or do you want me to pick one?
You pick it, it's fine.
I think... Well, probably my favourite track is 9to5 Ethics. That is what it's called, isn't it? Second one of Blankets. I just fucking love that song. However, I've got a weird, tiny little story to tell you about it.
Okay.
So a few months ago, my car was broken into.
Oh, great.
They nicked everything. They took the stereo. They took, they basically took all my shit.
Right.
Now, in that shit was a massive cardboard box full of CDs, and they took all my punk rock CDs. You know, these are things like obscure fucking demos that people have just handed me at gigs, right? Oh. And they took loads of them. And do you know what? They left one thing in the car. They left one thing in the car, and the one thing they left was an Egos at the Door album.
Good. They know what's going on.
So they left Blankets to Denon in Brilliant. The car. Now, weirdly, they took the case, but they just didn't take the CD. So I've only the CD. So I was listening to it on the way here because it's genuinely the only thing I've got in my car.
That is well funny.
But yeah,
don't blame them, Mike, but... wow.
It's like... I mean, I don't think it's a comment on your...
I'm taking it personally, but...
They got at least 6 copies of the Triple Sunday EP that they put out earlier in the year. Earlier in the year?
For family and friends.
Yeah. extra copies. But, you know, from, like, all the, like, you know, the bits on the side of the doors and stuff like that, anyway. But they left me Blankets to Die on.
That's kind.
So I think, yeah, to close us out, we'll listen to 9to5 Ethics. But, yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Cheers.
Managed to say, can't believe it's taken that long to have a brain fart. I was just about to say, I can't believe I hadn't said anything catastrophically stupid, but
you've done so
I did.
Well. I'm totally leaving that in as well.
Oh, podcast newbie.
But there, here you go. This is Egos at the Door with 9to5 Ethics.
Yeah! said, that is my testimony. I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I've inflicted on innocent people. And I'm sorry for the hate and destruction that others have inflicted on innocent people.
That was 9 to 5 Ethics by Egos at the Door, one of Ed Hall's old bands. I really, really enjoyed chatting to Ed today. He was a fantastic guest, and I hope that you enjoyed the interview as well. I got so much from him, and I find it fascinating to hear about his dedication to music and what he went through when he was younger to kind of make his dream a reality. We did an interview with him, I think, last year when he first got All Salt Mastering House going, you know, long before the recording studio was happening. You can find that on the Shout Louder website at shout-louder.com. He told us kind of, I don't know, it was a story of hard graft. He explained to us all the little jobs that he'd taken in order to get the mastering house opened and everything that he'd had to do after kind of, you know, clawing things back after his original studio was robbed. It's, I don't know, I really, really respect him, and I'm really glad we got the opportunity to talk to him. He's also given me a quick crash course in mixing, which I'm hoping I can apply to make some of our other podcasts sound a bit better. But, you know, we'll see. I'm probably the least professional podcaster on this earth, but hopefully that makes for a fun roller coaster of a listen. But that's pretty much it from us for the week. Thanks again for listening. We will see you down the front.